Would you say that you've ever sensed God's presence? Or maybe it's a common experience for you. Maybe you can sense his presence right now. Maybe for you it's a rare thing. Or maybe you feel a bit suspicious of people who claim to be able to feel God. Or maybe you're a bit envious of them. But how close is God? Is he only close to certain people? Or maybe it's just on rare occasions that he's nearby and the rest of the time he's unreachable and maybe not even very interested in our lives. As we read in Psalm 8, the question, what is mankind that you're mindful of them? Human beings, that you care for them? Well, the Bible speaks of a God who is passionately and constantly interested in human lives, for he created us, he loves us, and he does have a plan and purpose for us according to the Bible. The Bible also speaks of the fall, our rebellion against God, and the loss of that perfect relationship that we have with God, and also with one another, and the whole of creation, how that was lost in the fall. But it also then speaks of God's plan to restore all things, his plan of rescue that's progressively enacted through the history of God's people recorded in the Bible. And as part of that plan, God sets aside a human family from which he grows a nation, which itself forms the rootstock of a whole new humanity. And in fulfillment of his promises to the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, God purposes to bring his people out of slavery into a place of freedom. Well, that is a bit of a thumbnail sketch of the story so far, if you like. Of God's overarching plan. God has a plan, but it's more than just a top-level, broad-brush goal, more than just a mission statement. It includes more than just that sort of top-level description. It includes all the detail working out as well. And here we have a detail, as it were. 80-year-old Moses, one person, but a key part of this plan. He turns out to be quite a significant figure. And it turns out that his big brother Aaron and his big sister Miriam, pretty elderly themselves by this point, are also part of that plan. They are needed to help their little brother, Moses. I don't know if you remember the story. Moses had a slightly dodgy start to life, floating down the River Nile in a waterproof basket. His fortune changes dramatically when he's adopted by Pharaoh's daughter, and he lives as royalty in Egypt for a time. But then things change again, when in defense of a fellow Hebrew, he slays an Egyptian, and then flees to the desert, where he makes a new life for himself. Life, as it turns out, as a shepherd. And all this experience turns out to be part of God's plan, part of God's preparation for Moses' call. God has a plan, but it's part of God's preparation. God doesn't just do a bit of last-minute preparation. You know, we're all different, aren't we? Some of us plan a long way in advance. Others plan just, you know, as the deadline is approaching. But God doesn't just plan in the days and weeks preceding. He sets things up decades, millennia in advance. He sees the end from the beginning, he sees the big picture, but he also sees and plans every last and tiniest detail. And now is the time to let Moses know where he fits into God's amazing plan. Well, the story of the burning bush is well known, I think. It's dramatic, it's a bit strange, it's very memorable, I would say. But I'd suggest it's a slightly unusual experience, not something we should be expecting to happen to us on a regular basis. I'm not aware of any similar stories, either of old or in recent times. There are not many Church of England ordinands, for example, who, when they're asked to describe their sense of vocation or their calling, who start to tell stories of flaming vegetation and booming voices, or at least not many who get through the selection process. Now, Moses' call, though, was a turning point in history. It was the beginning of a new chapter in God's redemptive purposes. And it was fitting, maybe it was necessary, that it should be so dramatic, so clear. Moses needed clarity. He needed certainty ahead of this momentous task that he was being given. I don't doubt that God can, and maybe he does sometimes call people to do certain things with similar drama and clarity, and maybe you do have an experience like that or know of others who have. But I think the usual situation is quite different. All Christians are called. Sometimes we're called to do specific things at specific times, and we must always be open to that possibility, always seeking God's will. But we're all of us called to follow Jesus. That's a more general call than the specific call of Moses, but our call is nevertheless just as clear, and we had it in our gospel reading just a few minutes ago. The call is to deny ourselves, to take up our cross, and to follow Jesus. So Moses has this extraordinary call to deliver an enslaved nation. Our call, for most of the time, is more ordinary, more mundane. But both calls can be pretty daunting. And I think we sense Moses' appreciation of this in his question in verse 11. It's interesting to think how Moses might have reacted to a similar experience a few decades previously. He probably would have responded to God's call with enthusiasm and maybe a certain naivety because of his natural temperament, his youth at the time, and a privileged background, having been in the household of Pharaoh. He might have sort of said, wow, this sounds amazing, let me at him. Yeah, let's do it, God. You know, that might have been the response of the young Moses. But the 80-year-old Moses, who's part of this story, isn't just older. Sounds like he's perhaps a bit wiser, rather more humble. And it seems perhaps that he's also a bit scared. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Who am I? Well, his humility, I think, is well placed, but his perspective is all wrong. See, Moses is looking, quite naturally, quite understandably, at the visible things. He's looking at the things of the world, the human things. As Jesus said in our second reading, and it's so easy for all of us to do, you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things. Moses is focusing on himself and on his abilities or his lack of ability. He refers later on to his problem with speech. We don't know, but maybe he had a speech impediment. Maybe he had some physical disability which made it difficult for him. He might be remembering how those years ago he killed that man and think of his sort of moral unworthiness. He might be thinking of all sorts of other reasons why he wouldn't be a good person to go back to Egypt, to go and confront the most powerful man in the ancient world at the time, a man widely considered to be a god, and demand of this man that he release that army of slaves that are basically keeping the Egyptian economy going. Bit of a task. I'm sure we can think of lots of reasons why we can't do what God might be calling us to do. Perhaps it's something in our past. Perhaps it's something in our reputation, fairly or unfairly gained. Maybe it's because of our temperament or our skill set or our disability. You know, we might have some disability that's holding us back. Perhaps it's our circumstances. There are plenty of reasons that we can find, I think, when we, like Moses, start to look at ourselves. But in doing so, in doing this, we're looking down the telescope the wrong way. And instead of seeing the galaxy of God's plan and the possibilities before us, we see instead our own blinking eyeball. See, we're always in danger of looking at things the wrong way, of thinking of human things. It's the natural way. It's the way we are born. It's our natural vision. And Moses was doing that. But he and we need instead to think of, to look at, if we can, divine things, and to think of God himself. See, the point is that Moses' call isn't based on Moses. It's not about who Moses is, but who God is. Who is Moses is not the question. It's who is with Moses is the question. It's God's wise and gracious plan to make us part of it, to call us to certain roles and tasks. And the point, though, is not us, but him. Who I am is not the question, it's rather who is with me. And God sort of makes this point by referring to his name. Now, I don't know about you, I know what my name means. I think we've sort of mentioned this in other sermons before. Maybe you don't know what your name means, but in Bible times, the name was really important. It sort of encapsulated important things about someone's character and their qualities and their background. And now God has already introduced himself as the God of Moses' father and of his ancestors, Abraham, Isaac and Jacob. So he introduces himself in that way. And that is making a very important point. He's saying he is a God who has a plan for this special people who are descended from Abraham. A people that God has called to be his own and through whom he will bless the world. But he goes on. In response to Moses' questioning, he reveals more about himself through the name that he gives himself. The name, I Am. This is a simple name in a way, but a very profound name. And through it, God reveals himself to be a number of things. In the first instance, he's saying that he is self-existent. God simply is. He is I am that I am. The one who always is. Even before the universe was created, God is. The one who is eternally present to everything. And most significantly to Moses then and to us now, he reveals himself to be present. Present with his people. Matthew's Gospel, we just had that reading, begins with the name given to Jesus, Emmanuel, which I'm sure we know means God with us. The very last chapter of Matthew's Gospel has Jesus saying, "And surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age." So there we have the bookends of that Gospel, the first Gospel, describing Jesus as being present with his people. Jesus is the presence of God with his people. Jesus even then takes the divine name, the I Am, and applies it to himself. He does this, there are seven recorded episodes of this in John's Gospel, the seven I Ams. Don't know if anyone's able to, off the top of their head, list those seven. I was thinking of giving a prize to anyone who could. In order, of course, has to be in the correct order in John's Gospel. Did a little challenge over coffee, see if you can remember all seven. But he applies the divine name, the I Am, the name of God to himself in these seven different ways. God, in Jesus and by his Spirit, is eternally present to his people. He is the I Am. But God is not just present as a passive observer. He is constantly and fully engaged and active, working out his purposes and caring for those he loves. See, he says, "I know their sufferings." He says to Moses, looking at the Israelites, "I know their sufferings." But he doesn't stop there. He then says, "And I have come down to deliver them." I know their sufferings and I've come down to deliver them. God will act. And he does so. So often through his creation and through those he has made, through his people, and he's doing so through Moses. I often think, why doesn't God just act directly? Why did he even bother with Moses? It was a bit of a challenge to get Moses to do the right thing, and he had to persuade him to start with, and things kept going wrong. Why didn't God just step in? He could talk to Moses. Why didn't he just talk to Pharaoh, you know? Why did Moses have to be the one who's sort of the intermediary with all those plagues and so on? Why doesn't God just do it himself? I'm sure we all think the same, don't we, in situations. Why doesn't God just step in? Why doesn't he just stop this dictator from doing this terrible thing or this terrorist or prevent this natural disaster or this thing going on in my life or the life of my loved one? Why doesn't God just step in? That's a big question. I'm not proposing to answer it this morning. We've got plenty to discuss. But God it seems, has his reasons. And he usually causes his purposes to be fulfilled through other people, through his creation. He has agents who work for him. And Moses is an example of this. Moses is unique, of course, in his time. Exodus was a one-time historical event. But he is not unique in being God's agent. All God's people are called to be his agents. So it's making me think of Spy Academy now. We're called to be agents of the one true God. Do you know the song? If you don't know it, you'll know it this afternoon. Agents of the one true God. We're called to act for God, to see his will done on earth as it is in heaven. I keep going back to this verse from Ephesians 2:10. For we are God's handiwork, it says, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God has prepared in advance for us to do. To do good works. In other words, to do God's works. Good works are God's works. And God works through his people. There have been many tragedies in the world recently. There have always been tragedies in the world. But think what's been reported and discussed. Natural disasters, fires and flooding. Human disasters, terrorist attacks, wars, the refugee crisis. And of course we all have our own personal tragedies. As those we love have accidents, get cancer, dementia, die. As we suffer depression, we have relationships that fall apart. We don't do as well in our exams as we need to. We lose jobs. In all these situations and others, we can ask, well, where is God? It's easy to think that God either can't do anything, or maybe he doesn't care, or maybe he's not there at all. But if God really is the great I Am, if he really is the I Am revealed in the history of the Old Testament and in the life of Jesus, God incarnate in the New Testament, if he really is the I Am, then it cannot be true. The I Am God must be with us. But his presence is often hidden. Hidden from those who don't have the eye of faith to see it, who don't have the supernatural sight to see beyond human things, to see divine things. But God's presence can be seen and manifest in those that he's made. With every suicide bomber, there are hundreds of people, professionals and members of the public, who do amazingly kind and brave and sacrificial things. For every devastating hurricane or wildfire, there are acts of human kindness and courage far too numerous to count and often never reported. Every good gift, every good deed comes from heaven above. God is present in and acting through his people, directing, inspiring and empowering human beings made in his image to work according to his purposes to bring about his kingdom. God is sovereign. And he is using those he has made to fulfill his purposes. So, in conclusion, God is to be with Moses in the mission he is to undertake, just as he is with him at that special moment at Horeb. And the proof of God's presence will be that the sons of Israel, along with Moses, will worship God together at that very same mountain. And that is indeed what happened. There can be times in our lives when we feel close to God. There are times when we sense his presence, when we feel strong in faith, when we feel certain of our call. But I'd suggest there are plenty of times when that sense is going to be much weaker, or we're going to feel distant or unworthy. And it's in those times that we need to look back and to remind ourselves of our call, to not look at ourselves, but to look at God and his promises. It doesn't depend on who I am, but it depends instead on the promise and the presence of the Lord God, of the great I Am.